Let's do this.
Best thing you can do is be like bamboo, because bamboo bends, it doesn't break. You have to be flexible. Follow your heart, screw the fear. I don't want to look back and go, shoulda, woulda, coulda, but I was too scared.
On point.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of On Point. I'm your host, Taylor Burke, and today we have a very special guest. She is a hairdresser, a creator, an author, a coach, a speaker, and a TV personality. I guess the better question is, what doesn't she do? We have the one and only Tabitha Coffey. Hi, Tabitha.
Hey, Taylor, from that introduction, it sounds like I don't rest.
I don't think you do rest.
No, I do, actually. That's been one of the things that I'm really practicing and trying to share with other people is finding balance and learning how to rest and restore. So I promise I do rest.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I know you also meditate, so I'm sure that has to add a little resting into your routine.
Yeah, I meditate every day. It's a non-negotiable for me. So it's up there with my yoga. I know you and I initially met in person and I had broken ribs from my aggressive yoga that I do, but meditation is a non-negotiable for me. And I think we all need to find those non-negotiables in our life that just restore and revitalize us.
Oh, totally. How are your ribs, by the way? Completely healed?
Much better. Thank you. I'm back hard at it at yoga class and, you know, being a little bit more careful and stacking probably much better than I was before.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. We don't want you to go into the new year hurting.
No. Uh-uh.
So Tabitha, you are one of the biggest and most admired names in the world of hairdressing. I do want to take it back from the beginning. And I know you've told this story till your face has turned blue, but we're going to tell it again. When you came to Jersey from London on holiday to visit your mom, and you were supposed to rest and visit with her, but then you were like, I cannot do that. I need to work. Tell us about that journey.
Yeah. So my mom had moved to America, remarried, moved to America, and I came to be with her. Never been to America before, came to New Jersey. I have big love for New Jersey now, but at the time, it was the place that everyone either moved to start a family or retired to. There wasn't that in between. So here I was in my late 20s, no social network, really bored. New York was right there, but I didn't have a car or any of those things. It got tedious bussing it into Manhattan all the time. And I needed a social circle. And I also love what I do. So to me, the easiest way to meet people, make friends, get a social life, but also just keep doing what I love was to find a job. And that's what I did.
My question to you, Tabitha, is this job, was it right into hairdressing?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it was one of those, I've had many and I'm very blessed and grateful to have many of these serendipitous moments. I call them yes moments. We have to say yes more often, yes, instead of letting the fear monster jump in. So I was walking down the street in the town that my mother lived in and saw this beautiful hairdressing salon. They looked like the best salon in the area. It looked like the busiest and the largest. And I just thought, the worst they can say is no, right? Like I wasn't even going in saying, oh, you know, I worked at Vidal Sassoon and I did this. I just went in going, hey, I would like a job. And honestly, if they had have said clean the salon, I would have gone, okay, fine. If they had said shampoo hair, yeah, no worries, I'll shampoo hair. I just wanted to be in the environment that I love.
So did you go to cosmetology school, like before getting this job?
It's changed now, but when I started, when I was a young girl and started in Australia, we did apprenticeship. So there were actually a four-year apprenticeship. So we had to work in a salon. And that's where we got a lot of our hands-on training. And then we would go to what's called a TAFE college, which is our technical colleges. And we'd go to TAFE and we would sit exams. We'd learn science, practical chemistry, and do some practice hair hands-on. So it was a really nice balance of both. But in those days, to become a hairdresser, it took 4 years.
Wow. Was there ever a different path for you in high school or middle school when you have to fill out those projects? What did you write on your paper saying, like, I want to be this when I grow up?
Oh, I left high school so young, I didn't fill out any of those. I literally like rolled out of high school, rolled into my apprenticeship. I was very clear that I wanted to be a hairdresser. I was really inspired by hairdressers when I was young. You know, I was an awkward, obese, strange, and I wear that badge proudly now, child that didn't really fit in anywhere. But the thing that I loved is I'd go to the salon with my mom every week and she would get her weekly blow dry. And we'd go to the salon every Saturday and I would just sit there and watch women come in one way and leave another. And the physical change was always amazing and wow. But there is this moment that you have when you truly connect with people and work with them that they change. Like there's this moment when clients look at themselves and there's a sparkle in their eye and they feel beautiful for a moment and they love the way they look. And it may not last very long, but when you look hard enough, it's always there. And I looked for that as a kid and I kept seeing it over and over again. And to me, that was because of a hairdresser. And there was just such a beautiful energy and sense of community in the salon. And my mother's hairdresser to me was a rock star because he was really wacky and out there and dressed so unusually for the time and was so self-confident and took full ownership and authority of who he was and just so welcoming and amazing to this clientele. Many of them were older women, but I just thought, that's it, hairdressers are rock stars and I wanted to be a rock star. So it was a really easy decision for me. I knew I hated school. I knew I didn't want to stay there. To leave school really early and to go straight into an apprenticeship was what I wanted to do and thankfully what my mother allowed me to.
I love that story, Tabitha. Isn't it funny? Like you don't realize it at that time, but you going with your mom and witnessing that like changed your life, paved the path for you.
Yeah. And look, it still is because even though I don't, my career has morphed and changed and expanded in so many different ways. The thing that has never changed for me is that moment of connection with people. So I may not connect with clients in the same way now, physically with doing their hair and working on them in that way. But the connection and community is still the most important people to me, whether I'm speaking at events, I'm with my hairdressing community, I'm with business owners. It's all about that connection. And that has carried all the way through my career and my life.
Right, right. So when you got that email about the reality TV show, did you already have a full clientele? Like you were in the game?
Yeah, I was a business owner. I had been hairdressing 26, 27, 28 years, like around that time I'd been hairdressing. I started my hairdressing career when I was 14, working in a salon as a Saturday girl. And I formally started my hairdressing apprenticeship at 15. Yeah, I've been a hairdresser my whole life. So yeah, I had been a hairdresser for a really long time. I finished my apprenticeship in Australia, worked in Australia, moved to London, worked in London, worked for amazing organizations, companies in London, came to America, worked in America for a really long time, lived here for a long time, owned my own business. You know, it's good to push ourselves and it's good to get out of our comfort zone. And we become so comfortable with what we do. And sometimes, especially when you use those kind of skills, it becomes a little robotic. And it's really good to shake things up and see what kind of juice do I have? What can I do? How far can I push myself? This is fun. It was never about competing with other people. It was always about me and me. It was about me competing with me. But it sounded like just a really fun, challenging thing to do, which is why I applied.
So this was in 2008. It was for sheer genius. And you said that you were waiting in line and they actually came outside and picked you from the line and they offered you the show like a couple days later and then you turned them down.
I did turn them down because actually exactly what you just said, which is, you know, where were you at? I was a business owner and I was really busy and I had this amazing business and I had clients, family and my partner and my staff to take care of. And the commitment was 1 month.
Right.
1 month may not sound like a lot, but it's 1 month with no communication, with no computer, with no cell phone, with no credit cards, with no money, with like, it's all these things of 1 month.
Right.
Totally isolate. And I just kept thinking, you know, how do you walk away from your business? Even though I had a great team and amazing management, you can't, as an owner, walk away from your business. To me, the chase was getting it. When the reality set in, that's why I was like, yeah, I don't want to do this. I don't want to leave my life for right. a month.
You never had any reservations about what this could do to your reputation? Because I know for me, that's what I would be thinking.
Yeah, that wasn't on my radar. I mean, I went into this and I wasn't young. And I think that's a blessing in many ways. I was a grown up and I don't say that to be disparaging, but I was nearly 40 years old. So it's not like I felt pretty comfortable and secure with who I was as a creative and as a business owner, as a human being and all of those things. So I wasn't worried about all of that stuff. I was really worried about leaving my business that I loved and my team that I loved and all the things that I worked so hard for. So I didn't care about, oh, what are people going to say about me? And also, you know, also remember, if we wind the clock back, and I know it's hard for some people, this was pre-Instagram. Facebook was just kind of starting, but she wasn't where she is now. There was no TikTok. We weren't in this social media vortex that we're in now.
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, yeah, how many people are going to watch this on TV? It was at the precipice, really.
Did you have any idea what this would turn into?
No, it was always to compete with myself, to do something different, to shake the tree a little bit and see how far I could go, and have a new experience, right? That's just a check mark. It's like, oh, that sounds fun, check. I never walked in with the intention of, I hope this leads to something.
Got it.
It was always just a good time and a new experience.
Yeah. Well, that's a good mindset to have. And that's probably why you've gotten so far. Right after that, too, you went back into your salon for a couple months. And then Andy Cohen from Bravo called you up and invited you back, talking about your own show.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how you were feeling.
Honestly, I didn't know. So I got the call from Bravo, and I live in New Jersey, so I'm super close to Manhattan. They said, oh, would you come in to the office? It didn't seem like a crazy request. The show was over, right? Like, it was done. It had played on TV. It was finished. And I honestly thought that I would rock up to Bravo and they'd give me a t-shirt and go, thanks for playing, it was real, you know, rip up the contract that you signed to do it and have a really amazing life. That's totally what I thought would happen. And when I walked in and met with a couple of the executives, and Andy was there as well, they offered me a show. I didn't hesitate in saying yes. But again, it was not the expectation.
And I know you were heavily involved in brainstorming ideas with coming up with Tabitha's Takeover, because I know they were at first going to come into your own salon and kind of like watch you. And then you decided to kind of do a different path.
Again, it was the new days of reality TV. I also knew what it felt like to have the experience of being on TV just from being on Sheer Genius and the things said about me. And again, we didn't have social media in the way that we have it now, but what we did have were blogs. That was kind of the thing. There were all these blogs going around that people would blog about television shows and especially reality. And some of the things that were said about me were devastating. And I read every single thing that everyone said about me. And there were some lovely things, which was amazing. But unfortunately, we're human. The bad things overpower the wonderful things. And became very apparent to me that when you do this, when you put yourself out there, then it kind of is open season for the people that want to sit at home and just say whatever crap they want to say about you. And it's always low blow things. It's always, oh, she's so ugly. I wouldn't get out of bed if I had that mole on my face, right? It's low hanging fruit things, but they're really uncomfortable and painful. So I didn't want to do that to my staff. They didn't sign up for it. I did. I didn't want to do that to my relationship or family. I didn't want to do that to my clients. Like the space that I created in my business was a space of comfort and relaxation for my clients, where they could tell me or tell any of their stylists whatever they chose to tell them. And as soon as they walked out the door, it was done. Like, we held space for people. We didn't talk about them or share what they shared, right? We were just there to really make them feel incredible and relaxed and beautiful. And that was it. So I didn't want TV cameras around, and it would change the dynamic, and it just didn't feel fair for me. And I was really lucky that Bravo were very open to saying, what would you like to do? Or what do you feel you're great at? Or what are your strengths? Or, you know, what would be interesting for you? And because I was already an educator within the hairdressing industry, it's something that I loved. And the more we talked about, oh, I educate and here's what I do and here's how I help people and here are the challenges within our industry, the more we collaborated to come up with Tabitha Salon Takeover.
Going on these different shows for multiple years, did it make you more confident in your craft?
No, because first of all, that's not my personality, and that is incorrect, right? Anyone like hairdressing, being a chef, you know, estheticians, there's always things that are changing. The industry is always changing, whether it's new products or a new technique comes out or a new fashion comes out. So there's always this evolution and it's always moving forward. Even if it's a slight tweak, there's always a tweak, and every client, a brand new experience. So you can be the most proficient, right, hair cutter or colorist, but then you get that one client that can turn into a challenge because their hair isn't reacting the way you want it to react. So as soon as you start going, oh, I'm the best, I'm done, you know, you've really just kind of signed your own death warrant, I believe. So I'm constantly learning my craft.
Right.
You know, that's what it is. It's a craft, and I'm constantly learning and evolving and honing and practicing it to be proficient and to be good. So I've never thought I was the best, right? Like so many amazing everything.
I was going to say, that reminds me of a quote that I just read in my book. It says, when you stop learning, you start dying. And I feel like that really fits into what you're saying. So like when you start thinking you're the best, you're really not. You've stopped creating and...
100%. You've stopped your growth cycle, right? It's a time when many people do it, and I've seen many people do it. You become complacent because you think, oh, I've hit here. Right, I've hit this benchmark, whatever that benchmark is for you, and I don't need to work anymore. I don't need to show up in the right way, or I can relax and pump the brakes a little bit. And, you know, pumping the brakes is great as we started this to find balance and rest and, you know, resource yourself and all of those things. But when you kind of think I've reached the pinnacle so I can just cruise here, that isn't true. And it also means that not only are you becoming complacent, you've lost your passion for it. And that's problematic within itself.
Mm-hmm. Looking back at it all now, this could go with your career, this could go with the TV show. What are some things that you wish you knew then that you now know?
I think I wish I knew balance more. You know, it's something that the older I get, the more I knew about balance before, I just didn't think it was applicable. So balance is a really big thing. And follow your heart, like screw the fear. Fear is just such an enemy, and it shows up for people in so many different ways, whether it's self-doubt, lack of confidence, procrastination, being stagnant, right, not following their dreams. It shows up in all these different ways, but it's always fear-based. And at the end of the day, I don't want to look back and go, oh, shoulda, woulda, coulda, but I was too scared. What if they judge me, right? What are they going to say about me on social media? What if I don't get enough likes? Who cares? Like really, who cares? You have to tap into your own passion and love and fulfillment and to be able to follow that. And sometimes it's really challenging. So I wish I knew that more. I don't know if I would have done anything differently because I love my career and it's been really amazing, but maybe I would have lightened up a little bit more.
Yeah, it's hard to do that in the moment. Do you mean that maybe you put too much effort into work?
For me, it was all about work. I travel a lot for work and I travel a lot internationally, and I always have, especially working for hairdressing manufacturers and teaching other hairdressers. So I'm blessed enough to be able to travel all over the world teaching other hairdressers. But I would nearly treat it like a vacation, not in the sense of having fun, but because, oh, I got the stamp on the passport. So I flew 100,000 miles this year. Look at me, right? But I never actually rested. And I would get off these long-haul flights and the next day be back in the salon. And I would shoot my TV show. I'd be on the road for sometimes 6-7 months at a time. And that away from my home and away from my family and away from my business. And I would come back and then the next day be at the salon taking care of my clients and my team and everything else. So that's what I mean by balance. You know, it was, I lived the hustle. You know, we talk now a lot about hustle culture and we have a phrase for it. I lived the hustle. And yeah, working hard is great, especially when you love what you do. It is depleting. And at some point you get lost in what you do, not who you be. That's where the balance comes. You have to remember, who am I? What do I enjoy? There are other parts of me that I enjoy and I want to nurture and grow in tandem with this part. So it's learning how to find that balance to integrate all of those parts and to keep restoring yourself.
And you know what? When you start to do that too, you don't get as burnt out or exhausted. Like, you're not the best version of yourself.
Yeah, you're not. And you know, the number one thing that people say to me across all industries, especially within the hairdressing community, but other women that I work with across other industries, they'll come to me and say, oh, I've lost my passion. Done. Lost it. It's gone. Lost my mojo, can't get it back. And the deeper we dive into it and the more we go through the process, they actually haven't lost their passion. they're burnt out. When any of us burn out, we close down. We don't have the joy anymore, and we don't have the intuitive hits anymore, and we don't have the energy, and we don't have all the things that we need beyond, yes, it makes us crabby, right? And not the best version of ourselves. So that's why that balance is always important, of learning how to feed that creative fire or whatever it is that you do, right? Feed that passion in the right way, but also restore who you are in the right way. So it's constant give and take and ebb and flow.
Exactly. You tell this story when you went on your TED Talk in St. Louis. You talk about how during the era of shared genius, you were at Nordstrom's buying a pair of shoes, and it was the first time someone truly recognized you. They came up to you and they said, "Oh, you're that bitch on TV." My first question to that is, you're telling me no one's ever called you a bitch before?
No, not at all. I'm not saying I've never been called a bitch before. I'm saying that time landed differently because the other time someone had called me a bitch, maybe I deserved it, right? Maybe I was being the worst version of myself. Maybe I was being too tough on them, especially in a work environment. Maybe I'd said something snarky to someone, right? And they came back with calling me a bitch. So I'm not saying it's the first time I've been called a bitch. That wasn't my shock of it. My shock was that here is someone that I do not know as I'm walking through Nordstrom shoe department, and she's calling across the store. Now, I'd not interacted with her. I'm literally walking through the shoe department and she yells over, "Oh my God, you're that bitch from TV." Very different context, right? So I don't know you. I've not interacted with you. You're yelling across that I'm that bitch on TV. That's the label you've given me. Well, you could call me Australian, blonde, hairdresser, big mouth, honest, tough, creative. Right? Like pick all these other words, but that's the word you decided to call me. So it landed differently because, again, there's no interaction. I don't know who you are. It kept happening as well, which was the interesting thing. And it may not have happened in the way of we can change the way we say it. We say it to our friends often, right? And it nearly accepted now that it's a form of cuteness and, you know, it's okay to do it with your girls and your BFFs. I don't actually believe that's true. It's still a put down. And I think there are so many other ways that I would prefer to inspire and lift up my girlfriends and other females and use that word. But even though it was done in, "Oh my God, you're that bitch from TV, right? You're amazing." Why that word, right? Like, why is that word that you're picking for me?
Right.
And that kind of led me to actually look at the blogs that I hadn't done before. I hadn't kind of been into any of that space, partly because I was too busy. So that made me go, wow, all these people are calling me this bitch. They're kind of doing it nice though. They're not doing it like, ugh, right? They're kind of doing it in a nice way, but it's a weird word to call me. And that opened kind of the curiosity in me to start looking at all these blogs that were written about sheer genius and what people were saying about me. And it made me go down this rabbit hole that was a little dark, and then come up with my acronym for bitch. Because for me, if you're going to call me that, then I better have deserved it.
Right.
And if I had done something, I will always apologize for it. So I wanted to reclaim the negativity of that word and flip it over to put it in my feeling of who I am and create my acronym so that if it kept continuing and people kept calling me that word, that I could actually, yes, I am, on my terms.
Right. So that was a very pivotal moment for you. And like you said, you've changed the narrative now. And the label bitch, you've now made it into a characteristic that everyone wants to be. And just so the listeners know, the acronym that you came up with is brave, intelligent, tenacious, creative, and honest. So a lot to unload here, but tell me why changing this label was so important to you.
Did you miss Iconic 22? Feeling some FOMO? Don't worry. Catch up on all the amazing and inspiring talks from speakers like Venus Williams, Tabitha Coffey, and more with Iconic On Demand. Head over to iconic.vegaro.com to start watching. Then get pumped to join us at next year's Iconic Conference.
So we all have those labels. Some of them are self-imposed, right? Some of them are those words that we say over and over again, right? I'm fat, I'm ugly, I'm stupid. We play those narratives to ourselves. Some of them are the narratives that other people put on us and the names that we call. And I think each and every one of us can relate to that, and we have that word. And it's looking at that word. And for me, as I said, it's reclaiming it. It's looking at it and saying, okay, here's what you're assuming, right? Lady in Nordstrom yelling at me across the store. You don't know me. You know nothing about me except what you've seen on a TV. And all I've done is, right, compete. You don't know anything about me. You're calling me this word. Does that feel true to who I am? No. So who am I when I take this word? And it was flipping that script for me to really empower myself. As I said, when I went through those blogs, I got to a really dark place, right? And so personal, and talking about how someone looks and speaks and behaves. And it just was, now, again, unfortunately, we're a little bit more used to it. And now I teach bitch camp to people because, again, we all have that word. It is about taking the stigma and the sting out of whatever word someone has placed on us. Unfortunately, for many of us women, bitch is the word that people will use on us because it's a way to push us down, to hold us back, to keep us small, to put us in our place, right? To make us stop. And there are other people that go, yeah, I'm a bitch and I love it. And that's amazing as well. But think about that. Think about what that means. You can lead with strength and power and firm boundaries and standards and integrity, but you can also do that with love and kindness and compassion and understanding and non-judgment.
Exactly. You know what? And I just went back and watched one of Tabitha's takeovers. And it's funny because when I went back and watched it, not once did I ever think you were the label bitch, because everything that you were saying and everything you were doing, I was thinking, right? And I know it wasn't just me. I'm sure all of us were like, oh yeah, like this guy pulled out a hair book and was pointing at hair colors for his client. Like, what? Who does that? And it's funny because you called him out. And so maybe it wasn't the word bitch that you deserve, but you were outspoken. You were brave. And you know what I mean? You said what all of us were thinking. How did you become this way? Did you always grow up being outspoken and standing up for yourself and always saying what's on your mind? Or is that something that came over time?
It did come over time. You know, I was bullied a lot as a kid. I was obese when I was a child. So I was severely overweight and had a very challenging time doing anything athletic. Not that it was really my thing, but also because of my weight, it really held me back from playing sports. I mean, putting on a swimsuit when I was a kid and going to school, when I got in the pool, the kids would all call me Orca because that was the movie of the time about the killer whale. So that was like the anthem that they would sing to me was Orca as I kind of got in the pool or dove into the pool. And it makes you strong. It also breaks you, but through that other side, you have to lean into the strength and start to decide who you are and learn to stand up for yourself in the right way. And when it comes to what I do in my job, I have very high standards, like ridiculously high standards, and they are mine. I impose those standards on myself. I do have very high standards for my team and the people I work with, because I can see their potential. Even when they can't, I can see their brilliance and their potential and their talent and how great they are. And I just want to help crack open whatever is holding them back to really expand into their full greatness. So I do have these really high standards, and I do have this level, again, it's self-imposed, right? We've all got our level of excellence and this benchmark that we go to, and mine is very high. So that's when it comes to my career, there is a way. We don't all have to be the same or act the same, but I believe there is a level of service that we should provide for our clients, and a way to show up that shows our best self and shows our professionalism, dedication, honoring the craft that we do, honoring the products that we use, because we're using chemicals and making sure we're using them in the right way, and also honoring our clients and what they're asking for and how they should be treated, and appreciative of how they're spending their money. So they're the things that have always kind of driven me that you saw me do in the show.
Do you think that these standards or characteristics helped you in your career or hindered you in your career?
I think they helped me, but they're fluid, right? They're always moving. One of the things that I always do is I always reassess myself, and I would reassess my business. And, you know, one, again, something I tell business owners all the time, the best thing you can do is be like bamboo, because bamboo bends, it doesn't break. You have to be flexible. So everything evolves. Like, we evolve as humans. I'm not the same human today that I was when I was on TV. I'm a different woman, and that's totally fine and okay. If I had a business today, if I opened it, would many of those standards that I believe are standards of excellence, would I have those in my business? Sure. But would I have many others that now I believe are more modern, better business practices, better ways of interacting and sharing and holding space for our clients? 100% I would. That's evolution, and that's what we should all be doing. It's a constant reevaluation. So the standards aren't meant to box you in. They're meant to actually inspire. They're not meant to hold me down. They're meant to inspire and motivate me to keep reaching for new heights, but also to look at what's going on around and how it can grow and morph and then be made mine.
I feel like this is a perfect segue. You kind of mentioned it. You now do a bitch camp. Explain to us what this camp is.
I call it bitch camp. It's really self-empowerment. And what we do is we work through every module. I do them live. They're pre-recorded. So if you can't make the live, then I send them to you. It's about an hour. I am a talker and I get very passionate. So sometimes I go over the hour, but you know, you get the recording after, you can watch it if you don't want to show up live. But it's also really interactive. You know, I want to build a community, and the women that come, yeah, there are many hairdressers, but they're not all hairdressers. But the thing that we have in common is we're all trying to find that balance, trying to elevate and expand ourselves. And most of the women that come to me are entrepreneurs in some sense, established or starting, and looking at how can you be more brave in your life? Where is fear holding you back and what is the cost of it? How can you tap into that innate creativity that you have? Even when people tell me they're not creative, we're all creative. It's just tapping into it. We need to find resources to tap into that in the right way. How can you be honest? Where are you shoring up your boundaries and where are you not? Right? Where are you leaking energy and where are you not? So even though I call it bitch camp and that's fun and it resonates with a lot of people and we go through my acronym of bitch, it's really about being the CEO of your life. And I use a lot of business terms when I teach. So, you know, we have P&L sheets, which are profit and loss sheets in business, right? Everyone's familiar with those, you know, what they do and why we have them. Well, I believe that we should have something similar in our life.
Right.
You know, it's not just a profit and loss for the money that's coming in. It's where are we spending our energy that isn't actually resourceful for us, that isn't giving back, that isn't making us thrive, that's holding us down, that's draining us instead of recharging us. So there are a lot of the exercises and a lot of the teachings that I go through. We do it over 7 weeks. As I said, we do it live and then I do a Facebook group. So it's a private group. You can jump on any questions you have. We can talk about them. I give little exercises. Obviously, I'm a meditator. So I do little meditations and quick practices that you can do to try and facilitate change, but do it in a really comfortable way so that it's a mindset shift and little practices that we can incorporate into our day to start looking at how we're spending our energy and our time and our resources differently to really build the lives that we love and deserve.
That sounds amazing. Are you still taking clients for this? Like, people listening to this can sign up for your next 7-week course?
Yeah. So I take private clients as well, which is different, but Bitch Camp is starting again, end of January is when I would like to do it. The holidays is a bad time. I want everyone to be right, resourced, recovered, ready to do that. And I know we always say new year, new you. I don't believe that because January, we're still like nursing hangovers and we've got our things that we've gone through at the holidays. So end of January, beginning of February, I think is a perfect time to dive into this. If anyone goes to my website or if you follow me on social media, I'll post everything on there. You can sign up for my newsletter on my website and I will send you all the info.
Amazing. And I'll make sure I'll add the link in this podcast description. Tabitha, for the last 10 minutes before we start to wrap up, I let everyone know that I was doing this podcast with you. So I got a couple of questions and I'm going to go ahead and read these questions and they just want want advice from you. You can answer it from your expertise of hairdressing, but keep in mind that it's also other people as well. Okay, so our first question that someone wrote in, they said, Tabitha, you've been in the business for many years. From being a business owner and having eyes on you, what have you learned and what business advice can you give us?
Don't worry about the eyes on you. Don't worry about the outside eyes on you. Worry about your eyes on you. When we outward focus too much, and it's really easy, you know, when you're a business owner, part of your job as being a business owner, whatever business you're in, it's to provide a service for someone else, right? That's what we do. We're providing a service for other people. So other people's feedback and great reviews and loving what we do is super important. But when we become so focused externally or trying to please everyone, we end up often diluting our message, diluting our business or what we're providing. Focus on yourself in the right way. It's not being selfish. It's really focusing on, if you're not lit up as a business owner, if you're not believing in what you're providing, whatever it is that you're providing, then it's subpar and you know it.
That's good. Okay. The next one, it's a double whammy. What's the most valuable lesson you've learned as a business person and the most valuable lesson you've learned as a stylist?
They're probably kind of same, business owner and stylist. You have to be flexible, right? I said it before about being bamboo, and it's a funny statement, but it's true. You have to be flexible. Every single client is a different client, so you have to approach them. It doesn't matter how many times you've done someone's hair or how many times you think you've nailed that color technique or cutting technique or whatever it is you're doing. Every single person is an individual and they have to be treated such and looked at that way. And my philosophy has always been, however many times I've done a client, every time she sits in my chair, she's a new woman, right? If I haven't seen her for 6 weeks, shit, a lot of stuff happens in life in 6 weeks, right? Like a lot of crap happens.
Right.
So she's a woman when she comes and sits in that chair. And for me to treat her as, oh, hey, Taylor, same as before, is not only not encouraging to that client, it's also diminishing what I do and the value that I have as a stylist and a business owner. So it's being flexible and being open and listening. You know, as a business owner and as a stylist, we have to listen more than we speak. We have to listen to our clients. Sometimes listen to what they don't say, not just what they say. It's learning to really hold space with people and looking at them and tapping into what are they saying without saying and how is their body language and are they feeling open and comfortable. And the same with your team. It's learning to really listen and be brave enough to take the feedback that people give you, right? And it is being brave. Take that feedback and go, okay, do I agree with it? Sometimes you may not, and that's cool too. And if it is true, how can I improve that? How can I change this? How can I do this differently to make my team and my clients happy?
How did you learn this?
It's years of going through life, going through years of not great life, sometimes like really struggling and going through some really hard, shitty situations and learning how to navigate through it and tapping in again, finding that balance of who you are and what's important in you, but also out there. And who is the person that you want to show up to be, right? That's the question that I actually ask myself every morning. Who do I want to be today? Who is the best version of me today?
You say that every day.
Every morning. What is my intention? I set intentions every morning. What is my intention today? My intention today is to be the best version of myself that I can be today. Because today's version may not be tomorrow's. And today's version may not have been yesterday, right? Like, and I think we've all gone through such a challenging few years and we're all coming out the other side of it. And a lot of people are still feeling wobbly because the world still feels a bit wobbly. I have what I need right now. And that can be my mantra for an hour.
I love that. Okay. Next question. What would you say to someone who's struggling to price their services?
It's such a great question and so much longer of a conversation. So the questions that I would put back on someone when they do that is, why are you struggling? Where is your struggle, right? So my gut, and I don't know this person, so I may be totally off mark, but often when people ask me that question, my gut is they're having a hard time with their own value and self-worth. So they're questioning themselves and they're feeling like if I charge X, then people aren't going to come back. They're not going to think I'm worth it. And often that's wrapped around all these crazy stories that we tell ourselves, like, oh, in my area, no one in my area charges that much. I can't do it, right? I know someone that did that and clients left. So we'll wrap that belief around all these other stories, which also then kind of solidifies that feeling of not being good enough or self-doubt or self-value. We'll then validate it with all these stories we've told ourselves. So first question, as I said, I would ask, why can't you price what you want? What's stopping you? The next one is that true, right? Whatever that answer is that you come up with, is that true? Is that a true statement? Do you know that based on fact? Do you know it based on experience? Is it hearsay? Is it someone else's opinion? And we start to kind of peel it back from there. Often when people aren't charging their worth or feel comfortable putting up their prices, it's fear-based.
I guess along the same lines then, when choosing a salon location, what are the most important things to consider?
Where do you want to be? We have this old thing, and part of it is still true, right? In the old days, we used to say things like location, location, location. That's very true. If you're going to put yourself in an area that no one is going to see you, that is probably not the best area. If you're going to rely on walk past traffic, then you need to be in an area where people are going to walk by. So that's where that location, location, location thing comes in. But it's also, we have different means of promotion and advertising and reaching community now than we've ever had before. Thank you, social media. We can do that so we can reach people. I think the most important thing is to look at what are your non-negotiables? Do I need X amount of space? Do I need walk-by traffic? Do I need parking? Do I need other like-minded businesses around me? Do I need to be in a community that feels like a community or has people in the community that look like me, feel like me, act like me, believe, right? Like, what is it that you're looking for? And the other side of that is, who is it that you want to serve? Right? And as soon as you start to build that map of those questions, then you can find a location or the location will find you.
Perfect answer. Where do you see the hair industry going in the next 10 years? What do you think the trends will be?
I mean, look, the hair trends, I'm not even going to predict in 10 years. We don't follow trends in the same way as we used to, which is a good thing. We're, you know, we still come up with the color of the year and the cut of the year, and all of those things just feel very outdated because they're just rehashes of what we've done every time. There's only so many times we can say, oh, it's summertime, everyone's going blonde, right? Like it just right. Sounds ironic after a while. So who knows what the trends will be, right? I hope future fashion hair trends are things that really just light people up and make them feel really happy. And maybe we get away from everyone feeling like they need to look like everyone else or follow a celebrity and actually just do whatever they want. That would be delicious. I would love that. Business trends of the industry. The industry has changed so much. We're seeing more solopreneurs and suite owners than we've ever seen before. It is growing across the country, and I think that that will stay. I think there will be a little bit of a backlash from that because I think although it's really amazing that people are solopreneurs and can have their own businesses and suites and kind of work for themselves, I think a lot of people are feeling isolation fatigue and feeling lonely and not feeling as inspired because they don't have a team of hairdressers around them. And we feed off each other and we feed off community and we feed off seeing other creatives in there and just being able to interact with people. So I think that will change a little bit more. I actually think we may go from this solopreneur suite thing to more of a collab, which would be really interesting.
I love this one. And I've been looking forward to asking you this. What hair products are in your shower right now?
Products I have in my shower. This isn't in my shower, but I love it. K18, love, love, love. I use that all the time. It's a great, just strengthening product for your hair. It doesn't weigh it down. So I put that on every day on damp hair before I blow dry my hair. I have Joico K-Pack in my shower. I have Matrix Violet Shampoo, which is delicious and keeps me nice and blonde in my shower. And I also have, which is weird because you're going to look at me and go, really straight hair, but I've been in Australia in the sun. My hair's taken a beating. I've got keratin complex. I have a little mixture, everyone. I like a little cocktail in my shower. So
I guess.
I 3-1. You know, because every day we need something a little different. So some days I want to freshen up my blonde. Some days I feel a little dehydrated and my hair feels a little drier. So I'll go for something a little more nourishing, moisturizing. And then other days, just, you know, light and airy, and I'm good to go.
Totally. We're going to end on this note. When it's all said and done, Tabitha, what is the main thing you'll want to take away from your career?
You know what? I hope I've helped people. I do. I so hope I've inspired people. And I'm not going to limit it to my hairdressing career. The best things that anyone ever tells me is I've inspired them, ... Doesn't matter what the dot is. I've had, you know, young LGBTQ plus kids come to me and say, you inspired me to be comfortable with my sexuality or have a tough conversation. I've had people, you've inspired me to start my business, or you've inspired me to go to become a hairdresser. I've always wanted to, but I was told that I'd never make money or whatever. You inspired me to do that. I truly just hope that I'm a bridge for people from where they are today to where they would like to be. And I can try and bridge that gap in whatever way I can facilitate that change.
Like I said in the beginning of this podcast, you have inspired me. You've walked so many avenues of life, business person, as a stylist, as an author, as a speaker, as a person. I mean, there's so many different avenues that you've conquered. And I know, I mean, you have so much more to give, and I just can't wait to see what your next venture is.
Yeah, thank you. I can't either. I'm working on it now. So I'm excited for it as well, but thank you.
Are you really going to share anything? That.
It will be a different version of Bitch Camp. I'm looking at potentially maybe doing some TV again. It's not solidified, so I'm not giving you a scoop, but I didn't want to for a long time and I'm curious again. It's really about empowering people. And that is my biggest kind of mission statement, is anything I do, I need to make sure it feels really aligned for me, but really supportive and helpful for people, because so many people out there are struggling, but we need people to be there for each other compassionately and share our experience, right? Sometimes that's all it needs, is just have someone, you do it your way, but let me tell you how I did it, good and bad, right? Let me show you what I did, whether it worked or it didn't work. And then maybe that'll help set you on your path and expand you. And I think that is really important for me now.
Well, before I let you go, Tabitha, we're going to play a quick game. I play this on every podcast. It is called Taylor's Would You Rather. Okay. Do you know what Would You Rather is?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So I made 8 Would You Rather questions and I made it about you. And I'm giving you 2 options, but Tabitha, you only got 3 seconds to answer. Okay.
Pressure's on.
Okay. Here we go. Question number 1. Would you rather reboot Tabitha's Salon Takeover or start on a brand new show?
Brand new show.
Would you rather improve a salon with not great employees, but great management, or not great management, but great employees?
Oh, that's a hard one. Both.
Okay.
I would rather take both.
Okay. Would you rather use only Oribe products for the rest of your life, or only Kerastase products for the rest of your life?
Oribe looks so good in the bathroom. And I love their spray wax, but Kerastase has some delicious things as well. Can I plead the 5th on that one?
Fine. I'll let you go. I'll let you go on that one. Okay, here we go. Next one. Would you rather do an updo on a client or a blowout on a client?
Blow dry.
Okay. Where would you rather open your next salon? London or Australia?
Australia.
Would you rather get hair dye on your forehead and not be able to get it off for a week, or get hair dye on a client's cheek and they must leave the salon like that?
On my forehead that I couldn't get off for a week. Oh my God, that made me sweat, that one.
I laughed when I wrote it. Okay, 2 more. Would you rather never be able to use a blow dryer again, or never be able to cut your hair again?
Oh, never use a blow dryer again.
Oh, that was easy for you. Okay, last one. Would you rather do Taylor Swift's hair or Rihanna's hair, but for the Oscars?
Rihanna.
Oh, Rihanna. I knew it. I was going to say, you have to go Rihanna.
She's just too fabulous.
She is fabulous. And you know what? She's one that constantly changes her hair. So she'd keep you on your toes.
She would. And her wardrobe is just delicious.
Everything. Rihanna is everything.
Yeah, she is.
Well, Tabitha, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today. It was so nice to see your face and for you to take an hour out of your life, your very busy life, to come and talk to me. I appreciate it more than you know.
Thanks, Taylor. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, bye. Our goal is to always give you the content you didn't know you needed to know and to make sure you're always on point. I'm Taylor Burke. Thank you for listening.